Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
A couple of things, and I really don't want you all to miss me before we get ready to go. My wife was here, and she was the president of the Association of Black Psychologists a couple of years ago, and she was responsible for taking about 500 people, including about 300 black psychologists, to Ghana, West Africa, for their national conference. The reason I point that out is because I want to say a couple of things, and I'm going to go out of bounds with what I have to say relative to what we've been talking about. First of all, I grew up in Brooklyn, and I saw, looking back on my life, I saw about 30 of my friends die, you know, getting shot, overdosing on drugs, any number of things that took them off the planet, you know, beautiful brothers. So as I started to become more conscious, I looked around, I started asking this very important question. I think the most important question that I asked myself and that you can ask yourself is why. And I wanted to find out what was going on. So I began to change. I began to examine everything. I don't like to use the word critically, but I started to really check things out. So I went through a very, very serious change. I mean, serious change. And what my wife and I did, we decided that we were going to drop out from the system. We delivered two of our three children at home using midwives. She didn't take any medication. We didn't go to a doctor. She talked me into doing that, but it was a beautiful experience for me to be there to help deliver our children. They were born, by the way, 2 years apart on the same day, and our oldest daughter helped us deliver our children. We also changed our diet. We saw the hospital system was killing our people, so we changed our diets. We have been vegan for about 30 years. That means no meat at all in any form, no dairy products, no sugar, no white flour, the same thing that Dr. Whitaker talked about. Because we understood that we were in a war, and I want to emphasize that to you. We are in a war. We left New York and went to North Carolina, and really, it's on her again, we decided that we were not going to go in debt because the new form of slavery was economic slavery. Well, we got some land, we were very fortunate, and we built our own house. We built a log house. It took us 16 months. We worked night and day every day for the 16 months, and she was out there with a chainsaw in the cold and the rain. And we worked and we built a house so we would not have to give white people any money. I taught on the college level for a number of years at a so-called black college, and I'm down against black colleges. I'm going to tell you straight up because some of the madness that's going on in these schools. But what I want to say is that there are two things going on the planet now. One is that when white people came to us and said, we're going to free you, we're going to emancipate you, from the plantation, what they did was extended the boundaries of the plantation and made it an international plantation, made us think that we were free. In addition to that, they made every white person on earth a plantation master or owner. So there are two things in operation. We are in an international prison. Not just in America, but everywhere we go, our people are dying. So the things that are in operation on this planet is that white people want to kill us. I want you to understand that. They want to kill you. And it has nothing to do with what the kind of degree you have, what kind of car you have, what kind of title you have, what fraternity you belong to, what religion you belong to. They want to kill you because that is part of their plan. There are any number of reasons why they want to do that, but I'm not going to waste my time trying to figure out why they want to kill us. But I know that's what they want to do. And they want to do it in many different ways. Psychological, economic, cultural, spiritual, social, and biological, chemical, electromagnetic. They want to kill you. But they also want to make money in the process of your death. Now, I saw a brother when I was coming and he was smoking a cigarette. So now he's going to kill himself, but they're going to make money off of his death process. The other thing is that they want us to, if they don't kill us, like they tried to kill the brother by beating him up in New Orleans, if they don't kill us that way, or shooting like they killed the brother in Cincinnati, or like they killed Malice Green in Detroit, or like they killed Greenwich up in Pittsburgh, if they don't come out right and kill us straight, they want to get us to kill ourselves. Now, these are the only two operations on the planet. The other thing is that there's only one nigger on the planet. I never use that word. This is the first time I've used it. I don't even think that word. But there's only one nigger on the planet. And the nigger that's on the planet is the one that is destroying the water, the one that's polluting the air, the one that is exploiting people and resources. And the only nigger on the planet is the white man and the white woman. And then our people are not niggers. We are imitation niggers. Now, what we have to do is we have to devise a system or a plan for ourselves. And I said earlier that each one of you is a system. And everything that you do, every thought that you think, either you are supporting white world terror domination by your actions, what you buy, what you wear, where you go, what you eat, how you use your time. You are either supporting the white people in their process of death, or you're for African liberation. It's one or the other. And if we don't use our time wisely, then we are engaging in a form of subtle suicide. Because as I said earlier, their system is still going on. They still have these images on TV that are going on. They're still warehousing our children in the special ed, giving them Ritalin. There are no jobs. We fill in the hospitals. So their system is not stopping. And then finally, I want to say that we need one idea. And we're not thinking about a solution to the problem. We're dealing with all these other things, but these are diversions from the solution to the problem. And we have to start to think about a solution to the problem so that these young brothers and sisters who are here now, who are 15, 16, and 17, are not here 25 years later talking about these same problems. Now, how do I know that the white people know that we are going to come up with a solution to the problem? I know it because they have retina scans, they have what they call racial profiling, DNA banks, and they're monitoring our people to try to prevent the one person from coming up with the one idea. And the one idea is how we are going to exterminate white people, because that, in my estimation, is the only conclusion I have come to. We have to exterminate white people off of the face of the planet to solve this problem. Now, I don't care whether you clap or not, but I'm saying to you that we need to solve this problem because they are going to kill us. and I will leave on that. So we have to just set up our own system and stop playing and get very serious and not be diverted from coming up with a solution to the problem. And the problem on the planet is white people.
Be hard to follow that one. You can get as black as you want. I don't know if you can get that.
I'm elder.
Every one of us will die. And every one of us who's black will be faced by our ancestors who were slaves. And the first question they're going to ask us is, what did you do with your freedom to free other black people? But not going to ask us, did white people kill us? Because white people killed them. Ladies and gentlemen, we don't have time for racial fanaticism. We are in a country that is trying to destroy us in every way possible, and we must use every weapon that we can think about, and we must create new ones. But in the interim between if your lifespan is not spent empowering yourself politically, economically, and psychologically, then don't blame white people, because the only person guilty is you. I laid out a plan. And some would say, well, that's a digression. What are you doing to empower people like you? What are you doing to fight for them? Because I assure you, our ancestors who were slaves will ask you that as soon as they welcome you wherever you're going after you leave here.
Welcome, Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaga Amana El-Bay. And this evening we are dealing with part two of how do we stop the murder of our children. We're dealing with the following questions. How do you stop America from killing people of African descent? What type of training should we have? How strong should our unity be? Should we kill the people who kill our children? If so, what kind of weapons should we use? Should we form national military units? How valuable should we regard the lives of our children? What have people of African descent done in about war in the past? These are the questions that we're going to deal with after the first hour. We're going to open up the phone lines so that if you got questions or comments, you can raise your hand. we're offering free articles this evening, the 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game and How to Play, Secrets of America, the U.S. Bankruptcy and the Moors, and other documents. In order to get that, just send me an email. Say, Tahaga, send me those email, articles you mentioned on your broadcast. Send that to tarhaka53@hotmail.com. That's tahaka53@hotmail.com. We'll rush that right on that to you. Now, for those of you who got problems with the Internal Revenue Service, go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. We put that in the chat room. http://www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Keep in mind, on August the 16th and through the 18th, we will be hosting the Morris Summit right here in Jacksonville, Florida. So make sure that you are down here. Now, I want to talk to last night I was watching the broadcast. I don't usually watch TV, but I was with a friend. And they wanted me to see something, so I took a look at it. And we have two Caucasian males that were murdered, gunned down here in Jacksonville, Florida. And the sticker on their automobile read, in support of George Zimmerman. So we want to deal with a little bit of that this evening. And we want to take a look at what we have here. And what we're trying to do here today is we're trying to come up with a solution to the problem. We're trying to do no paperwork. Okay? We want a solution to the problem.
After the trial, I had this thought popping in my head. Oh, my God. He's declared not guilty. Could he get a gun again? And my question was immediately answered. Not only can he get a gun, he can have his own gun. Judd Legum from Think Progress was the first to tweet about it, and he showed a picture of the gun in question, of course. Under Florida law, Zimmerman will get back this gun, which he used to kill Trayvon Martin. Well, Judd was right. That is exactly the case. And he has gotten that gun back. And he's apparently walking the streets with that gun as we speak. Don't take my word for it. Take his defense counsel's word for it.
So do you think he would, if he could, he would carry a gun again?
Yes. Even more of a reason now, isn't there? A lot more people out there who actually hate him, though they shouldn't.
So you're saying he needs to protect himself?
Yes.
And the way to do it is by carrying a weapon?
It's one way.
So all the more reason to carry a gun. Now, look, I get it. There's some logic in it. So a lot of people are angry at Zimmerman. I understand. Could you imagine if he did it again? And what defense would he use? Well, self-defense. There was a lot of people who hated me. And poor wimp, pussy George Zimmerman. You remember that was the defense they put on, literally, right? They brought on his MMA trainer, to say he was the softest guy he had ever trained, right? That he was so weak, so pathetic, that he had no choice. If he ever confronted in any kind of fight, he would immediately lose and cower, and hence he must shoot anyone he's in a fight with. And he got away on that. So now he's out in the streets with that gun, and his defense attorney is saying he's ready to use it. And remember, my client is a monumental pussy. So if you even, and remember what the medical examiner said. She said his injuries were very insignificant. If you even lay a finger on him, and he gets any kind of insignificant injury, he will shoot you dead. His defense attorney's telling you he's ready to do it again. My God, have some humility and don't rile people up. Go away, go away. Even if you're the defense attorney, I know you want to gloat. You want to get money for your next big client. Ha ha, Marco Amaro, I'm the guy who got away with it. Got Zimmerman off. Okay, shut up about it. You're going to get those clients anyway. But no, you're talking about, aha, my guy's got his gun back. More.
Not Where does him. He go now?
I don't know. He will never be able to just walk down the street and not worry about who's looking at him or who's walking up behind him.
Does George Zimmerman still walk around with a bulletproof vest?
He wasn't wearing it during the trial a lot, but I know that when he was out in public, he wears it. I think that he has a legitimate fear and a legitimate concern. He doesn't know who's going to overreact.
Again, poor Zimmerman. He's the victim. He's the victim. I mean, God, he's so afraid for what's going to happen next, you know. I feel so bad for Zimmerman. Marco Amaro is so right. He's the one that got shot, right? Oh, right. No, he was the one that shot the 17-year-old. Right. I forgot that for a second. In fact, of course, these guys are ecstatic. They're on the warpath now. They say they're going to sue NBC. Now, NBC did something wrong. There's no question about that. They edited the dispatch call wrong. They already fired a producer and a reporter over that. But it's not enough. Zimmerman's thinking, and O'Meara's thinking, give me the money, give me the money. But how could it have prejudiced you so bad if you won the trial? But they don't care about that. They just want to cash in, so they're going to sue NBC now. But it's not enough. It's not enough to rub it in your face that he's got the gun back, they're going to sue NBC, they're going to go for the money, etc. No, he's also got to throw a racial component into it. While they always say that the other side makes it about race, listen to Mark O'Meara.
The prosecution raised this question about whether the outcome would be different if the races of the defendant and the victim were different. Do you think it would have been different if George Zimmerman was black?
Well, I think that the things would have been different if George Zimmerman was black for this reason. He never would have been charged with a crime. It seems as though what happened was an event that was being looked into by Sanford Police Department and, quite honestly, as we now know, looked into quite well. What happened was this became a focus for a civil rights event, which again is a wonderful event to have, but they decided that George Zimmerman would be the person who they were to blame and sort of use as the creation of a civil rights violation.
So, if you were to say, hey, listen, if Zimmerman was black and Trayvon was black, perhaps it's black-on-black violence, and, you know, that's unfortunately society too often ignores that. That's an interesting point, okay? It's not a point I would have made in that instance. I would have told the reporter, hey, this is not time to talk about racial difference. It's time to talk about racial healing, right? But he didn't decide to go in that direction. He decided to talk about race. Now, if you're going to make the argument, if Zimmerman was black and Trayvon was white, that they wouldn't have charged him, you live on a different planet. Black people shoot white 17-year-old white kids all the time who are unarmed and get away with it, right? In America, right? In Florida, right? That happens all the time. Okay, a big, older, black guy goes up, picks a fight, pursues, and we have tape where he pursues a 17-year-old white kid in khakis that's rolled up at the front. He's got Skittles in his pocket and an iced tea and shoots him dead. Oh, they say, oh, Mr. Blackman, oh, you're free to go. I'm sorry. You killed a 70-year-old white boy? That's no problem at all, man. He must have had it coming. It was obviously self-defense. Free to go. Yeah, that happens in this country all the time. Really? You don't even believe that. Even if you're the hardest Zimmerman advocate in the world, you don't believe that. You can't be that stupid and that naive. And then finally, oh, Florida. If it's a black person doing stand your ground or self-defense, they let him go all the time, right? Well, that's weird because last year, Marissa Alexander, so same time frame, Marissa Alexander is got a restraining order on her husband, okay, ex-husband. She's never been arrested. She has a master's degree. She's a mother of three. She's got a toddler and 11-year-old twins. She works at a software company, perfectly respectable, et cetera, payroll software company. And she fires a warning shot because her husband's in the house, and she thinks that he might abuse her. Well, I mean, black on black, like Zimmerman was talking, O'Mara was talking about there. The most charitable thing you could do. Well, obviously, the authorities are going to ignore that because black people, I mean, they get off all the time, right? And in this case, Stand Your Ground was initially to help, one of the main reasons they said was to help women who are victims of domestic abuse. Perfect. And it was a warning shot. She didn't fire at him. She didn't kill him, unlike Zimmerman. Well, I mean, if black people get away with it all the time and all she did was fire a warning shot for the specific grounds that Stand Your Ground was passed in the first place, well, obviously she got off, right? Same prosecutor, by the way, Angela Court. 20 years. They didn't charge her with 20 years. She got 20 years. She's sitting in jail right now. She'll be in jail for another 19 years. But black people get away with it all the time. I mean, come on. Mark O'Mara must be right. Scott, you know, black people in this country, they're so privileged.
And we could go on. The piece was longer. I brought this up to get those who might think that we only talk about rats. What are we saying here then? That the very nature of human relations itself can change the functional nature of the brain. The idea being then that even when they come to you and tell you that there's some kind of correlation between a brain functionality and a particular behavior, don't fall for the okey-doke that necessarily means that the society is not responsible for producing that behavior. Society shapes the brain as it shapes other things as well. I'll move on quickly here. The theme of black-on-black violence, the book, is that the alleged criminality of black males will be used to justify the repression of the African-American community and quite possibly its genocidal annihilation. In other words, the running theme of the book, Black on Black Violence, is this: that the alleged criminality of African males will be used as a major rationale so that when this society decides that it will annihilate this community, the other members and nations and people in the world will buy it because they have been convinced that we are innately criminal. And what I'm trying to get across in there then is how this propaganda is developed. This is why, despite what you say from a logical point of view, despite the fact you may say this is not the majority of our youth who are in jail, the vast majority of our youth are not engaged in violent behavior. The majority of people on welfare are not black people. The majority of people in prisons are not black folk. You know, you can lay one fact after another, and yet what happens? The people still insist in seeing it as a black problem, don't they? When you lay evidence and facts before a people, even evidence and facts that they themselves have collected, and they still insist in seeing you in a particular way, then you must recognize that they are seeing you in that way because it is important to their own psychological state of being and because it serves their own interest. Yes. And you must ask the question then, why are they about projecting this kind of image? And you will see then that it is there to rationalize their behavior against you. They're not, and therefore, as I will say a little later on, this idea of arguing with these people point for point is not what the game is about. It's not what it's about. Let me quickly move on. I want to lay a context, because often we discuss these issues out of context. And I've told you before, as I've told you in Black on Black Violence, that European sociology, psychology, and so forth decontextualizes issues, meaning that it discusses violence or crime as if they do not exist within a social context, as if they do not have a history, as if they do not serve a function in the society. So you're made to look directly at the behavior and the behavior only, and to judge it and treat it without looking at the context in which it occurs and look at how the context itself may create the behavior. And even behavior therapy plays this game, by the way. Okay? You must start at the context first before you discuss these problems. What is the context? The context is this, that we are a dominated people. We are dominated by European people. Am I making myself clear?
Yes.
This is where we start. This is where you start. We are under the control of another people. We are vulnerable to that other people who are holding our lives and the quality of our lives in their hands. That's the fact you must start with. The second fact is, domination is a social problem. Am I clear here? Domination itself is a problem. It is a social problem, particularly for the dominated, isn't it? Even if it's for the dominator, it's still a social problem. Keep this in mind. Domination, therefore, generates the very existence of domination means that a social problem has been what? Generated. Huh? You can't have domination without having a what? Social problem. So domination generates a social problem, and as long as it exists, it maintains that social problem. As long as you're under the domination of Europeans, you will have social problems. There are some idiots among us who think that they can leave the European in control of African people and get justice and peace. It is not possible. Domination is built on injustice. And you cannot then leave the European in power over black people and then expect to be to receive justice. It's illogical. It's not possible. Domination benefits the dominator. We are dominated because it what? Benefits those who dominate us. Therefore, the dominator benefits from the social what? Problems. In other words, the problems of black people benefit white folks. And they are created for their benefit, and they are maintained for their benefit. And therefore, those who dominate us have an investment, monetarily and every other way, in perpetuating the symptoms of maladjustment in us as a people, and they engage in interactions that reinforce those problems. That's why no matter what kind of program they lay out for you, it does not resolve the social problems that they claim they're designed to resolve. And I'll be through in just a second or two here. The problems of the dominated provide evidence which justifies their domination and supports their own domination. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the major outcomes of power and one of the major benefits of being powerful is that you can generate the evidence to justify your power and to justify your domination. Why, when I go to prison, I see that 56% of you are in this prison. Therefore, we are justified in controlling you. But then we forget how what? They created the problem so that 56% could be in there. Now then, as the gentleman who wrote Blaming the Victim put forth, and I will say, first of all, this problem is created. Our problems are needed. This is what I'm arguing in Black on Black Violence, that this society needs the criminality of black males. It needs the fantasy that black males are criminals. It is necessary to the very structure and being of this society. It is very necessary to the self-definition of Europeans. It is very necessary to maintaining their domination and advancing their domination. Therefore, they must create these problems, or they must even imagine that these problems exist where they truly do not exist. Therefore, they create the problem, and then, as Ryan argues, first they identify the social problem, second they study those affected by the problem and discover in what ways they are different from the rest of us, this great underclass. How are they different from the rest of us? And you know now, arguing black on black, that the so-called criminals in the jails are not any different from any of the rest of us. You are not going to find a criminal personality, you know, and yet that's been the golden grail of psychology. You know, how can we distinguish these people from the rest of us? We're all in this game together.
Greetings. I'd like to invite you out to the Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th, 2013, located in Jacksonville, Florida. 3 days of executing and planning of executive plans for 25-year agenda, operating as an economic unit. The presenters will be Shem L. of the Tamarain 2 Project, Dr. Ali Muhammad and Minister Inki of the Black Genetic Tour, Sundiata Amael, Professor Asif Deanham L., Tahaka Amana L., Abundance Child, Fatima, the Alchemist Shabazz, Messiah L., and more. Topics will be the execution of urban geoponics, creating independent distribution systems, creating independent economic systems, genetics, private security force, the wholesale and manufacturing of natural products, Morristown, creating one in every state, Morris Eastside Farms, creating one in every state. You do not want to miss this summit. It is very enlightening, empowering, and most of all, it's applicable. Everything that we talk about, we do. Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Log on to www.summitofthemoors.com. You can register for free. The summit is always free. You can also get your hotel room, which will be on the river at the Wyndham Hotel. That's www.summitofthemoors.com. The summits are always free. See you at the summit.
It's now official, Moors. The brothers and sisters have been contacting me all over the United States asking me, when are you guys going to get something to help us deal with the Internal Revenue Service? I'm here to tell you, officially, we do. Go to http://www.newfreehelpgroup.com. You see, to get rid of the Internal Revenue Service package. Right there, waiting on you. Okay. Now, this is the breakdown of this thing. What we got to understand is the Internal Revenue Service is a private corporation not connected to the United States government as a country. and is operating illegally. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, and if you're interested in doing that, go ahead and contact me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Get rid of the Internal Revenue Service packages now officially available.
As to whether genes can predict criminal behavior. These kinds of discussions obscure the main issue, which I believe is the issue of the power relationships between Africans and whites in the world. And between an ongoing, and it's about an ongoing effort of Europeans and white Americans to in some way justify the social control of African Americans and of Africans in the world. So seizing on genetics as some cause of criminality or some other issue really serves the same purpose, and that is to justify the racial, ethnic, economic status quo.
But it does need to be put to sleep for all intents and purposes, doesn't it?
What really needs to be put to sleep is the power differential between Europeans and Africans, because these issues flow from this. The main issue here is domination. We must recognize that African people are a dominated people, and that domination itself is a social problem.
All right, let me stop you on that point.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive my bad manners, but we
yes.
do need to take a break, and we'll be back with one more segment.
Okay.
Before you were so rudely interrupted by me.
Yes, what I'm trying to get across is the idea that we must interpret these events within a social political context. And you have to start with that context first before concentrating on specifics.
So you're saying in a nutshell that mm-hmm. this is about control of a people for political reasons.
Yes, it's about social control and justifying social control.
Mm-hmm.
So if it were not an issue of a supposed connection between genetics and crime, it would be an issue of IQ and crime,
mm-hmm.
you see. In fact, there's a parallel with the whole issue of the innateness of the difference between black and white IQ. When you look at it, it adds up to the same thing. For instance, I'll just ask a rhetorical question right quick. What if we would definitely find out, and irrefutably find out, that blacks were or are innately inferior to whites as far as intelligence is concerned? What if we were to discover that blacks are innately superior to whites intellectually, or equally as intelligent as whites, or that environment is much more significant in determining intelligence than genetics? Frankly, you would have the same social results. The whites would attempt to control any of these factors as a means of controlling their domination. If we were to prove irrefutably that we were more intelligent than whites, it would be to their economic interest still to destroy us as a people or to mm-hmm. socially control us. Or if we were established that we were innately inferior to whites, then it would still justify white domination, or if we were as intelligent. So what I'm trying to say is that when you get caught up in these debates, to get caught up on the specifics really obscures the real issue, and that real issue is the justification of social control and maintaining dominance.
Nonetheless, though, I do remain troubled, and there
mm-hmm.
is a question that I have. Since criminal behavior is not exclusive to any particular group, much less our people, has there been any initiative to study criminal behavior among people of European descent?
No, and I think that's the whole point, you know, because that's what I'm saying, that this is a political statement that was made to essentially rationalize and justify the social conditions into which our children have been born. And that's the point. You know, that's the point that should be made here. And that's why it's so dangerous that the National Institute of Health would, in fact, offer up an RFP to have a conference on this issue when most enlightened people coming out of the scientific community have dismissed the notion that there's a genetic link between to crime. We held hearings on Dr. King's birthday entitled Violence as a Public Health Issue, Its Impact on Children and Youth. Over 2 days of testimony, scientists, doctors, educators came forward, and all of them said that the reason that we have crime and violent crime within our communities is directly related to impoverishment, it's related to the power of the overarching influence of the media and the kinds of culture and values that are being projected to our children and youth. It is related to the fact that big money interests have begun to transport guns into our communities that were originally designed for military use. These are the reasons that we have violence within our communities. And the problem is that the powers that be, who in Washington, D.C. at this point in time, who do not want to address the economic conditions, the social conditions, would use genetics now as a rationalization for the violence that exists at this point in time.
How virulent is this move?
Oh, I think it's very serious. My staff, who have been working on the Human Genome Project, have done research on a number of different papers that have been developed and articulated by a number of very powerful people, particularly in academia, who are beginning to promote this issue. And most importantly, what's dangerous is that it's being linked up with the political process now.
Dr. Bregan says that drugs are being dispensed now to significant numbers of youths in the school system.
Absolutely.
Does that exist in the New York City school system?
Absolutely. Disproportionately.
What's being done about that?
Disproportionately.
For our kids, black kids.
For our children. A number of us have spoken out against it. I know that organizations like Advocates for Youth have been adamantly opposed to the use of drugs, particularly for our special ed children who in and of themselves are overwhelmingly African and have been tracked into the special ed classes. And there's a unreasonable amount of drugs being used in our children's psychiatric hospitals, one of the things that we must oppose.
But are these young people who have been hospitalized or are just in school and deemed hyperactive, for lack of a better word, and therefore...
Both, and I'm sure the doctor can attest to that, but it's
please,
both.
In the few moments we have left.
Yes, I want to speak to a broader issue as well, because that issue is this,
quickly,
that what you have going here is the medicalization of a social problem, which means that if you put it in medical terms, you can engage in social control mechanisms that you couldn't do if you used other terms.
And you can also sell drugs.
Right.
The pharmaceutical companies are
so
powerful influence. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
This is a story, and this is a situation that warrants our continued scrutiny. And so we promise you that we will stay on this story. We'd like to thank Dr. Wilson and Assemblyman Green for being our guests. And thank you for your attention. Hope you found it useful. And you can be assured we're going to stay on this story. Good afternoon.
And here we have then at the University of Maryland, long connected with the U.S. Army, by the way, hosting a conference on so-called genetic factors in crime. Bregan charged that this meeting, which was canceled, was part of a broader program, a violence initiative, a federal government research agenda. So that this program is only a part of a larger agenda. And it was designed to move toward finding a genetic marker that would supposedly identify children at high risk of becoming criminals and to develop plans to deter them through medication. And this is interesting due to the fact that there's little or no real information that links directly in any kind of strong way or even in a mild way a relationship between genes and criminality. There's been no DNA segment that has been discovered that codes for crime. When you think about it, the idea is ludicrous anyway. What is crime? What is violence? What is violence? In other words, I'm asking this question because you have to do a linguistic analysis. They are all forms of what? Violence. There are many different types of what? Crime. Different types of aggression. Not all violence is necessarily bad. There is what we in psychology may call hostile aggression. But there is aggression or violence that may be used in terms of what? Self-defense. Violence may be used to protect your children from attack. Violence may be used to protect the lives of other people. So now if we're going to get a gene for violence, what type of violence, or in removing the gene for violence, if we were to find it, which is an unlikely situation, are we also removing a people's capacity to defend themselves and to use violence in their own interests? What I'm saying is then, be very careful when people use words like violence, aggression, crime, and so forth, and ask yourself, what kind of crime? You know, do we have a gene for every type of crime you can name? So that even when we change definitions of crime, a new gene comes into being that we're going to find related to that particular crime. And when we decide that certain other behavior is no longer a crime, will the gene which was coded for that crime disappear? Ludicrous. Ludicrous. I talk in Black on Black Violence about the structuration of crime. That crime follows, the type of violence that we talk about, or crime, even its nature, follows the class structure and follows the skills levels of criminals. You see? Why is there so much so-called violent crime in certain segments of the society? Because when you look at the skills levels of the people committing them, if they were to commit a crime, that's about the only crime they could commit. If they were accountable, they would commit the crime of embezzlement and steal hundreds of thousands or millions because they have a particular ability or skill. And you'd be a fool if you were an accountant or in an SNL where you could steal millions of dollars and then make the public pay billions back and then hang out on the street and knock somebody out in the head. So here we have this crimogenic society that robs our people of skills and other means so that if they decide to participate in a crime, then the probability is that it will be violent by the very nature of the way the society has set them up in the beginning. In other words, the society even determines the type of crime you are most likely to commit itself. Okay? And then it tells you, you're violent. Teach me to be an accountant. I won't hit any more people in the head. I'll just rob them by books. Okay? And then they want to talk about white collar crime and, you know, and the other kind of collar crime. Come on, wake up. This has nothing to do with genes. It has to do with the nature. I've also told you about reversal, right? I mentioned the fact that in order for us as a people to be in the situation that we're in, we literally have to be turned backwards. We have to think backwards, behave backwardly, deal with the world backwardly. It's necessary. That's the only way the system can maintain itself. Sometimes I say the best way to win an argument is to concede to your opponent. Okay, there is a genetic marker for crime. Let's now look at the criminal record of African peoples and European peoples. The record is clear. If there is a genetic marker for crime, would we look at the fact that the European has committed a crime against every people on every continent, destroyed millions of people, then that argues for his genetic criminality. And that argues then for us to medicate him and control him. You know, the other thing I'm surprised at is we keep being surprised. We keep thinking that this is some new initiative. I mean, the violence initiative began with our enslavement and continues today. We already have fought the violence initiative, ladies and gentlemen. It is already operating. We bought it when we bought learning disabilities, when we bought the concept of hyperactivity, when we bought the concept of impulsivity, when we bought the concept of special education. You're already in it, connected to these so-called symptoms of learning disability, are the very same symptoms they're going to try to connect to the so-called genetic markers. And our children are already being drugged. The violence initiative has already occurred because our youth are already going to jail in record numbers. So why are we talking about these people are initiating something to bring and put our youth in jail? They're already in jail. Those that are not already in jail are in juvenile detention, are under the aegis of the VCWs, you heard it tonight, in the special education program, already being drugged, already being therapized, already having their minds distorted in various ways. And the worst violence initiative program is the public educational system itself. So this so-called initiative that you're talking about tonight is a mopping up operation. That's all it is. If you're telling me in Washington, D.C. and other places, black youth and black people, 75% are in some form of contact with the criminal justice system already, some 60% in any given day in Baltimore and other areas already in contact with the criminal justice system, well, then what will this new initiative do? Just make it what? 100%. We should have already been what? Upset. Why are we kicking and screaming now? We should have been screaming already. This initiative is an old trick in psychiatry and psychology. It's a trick that we call the medicalization of social problems.
Okay, Moses, we're back. It is at this time that I want to open the phone lines. If you got questions or comments about anything that you have heard so far, and if you want to give us your rendition of the solution to the problem based on what we have heard and what we have discussed in the previous broadcast in part one, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll open up the phone line. Just follow the prompts on your phone, and we'll open it up that for you, okay? This is plain. The brother has laid it out for you. All of this stuff about creating symptoms and setting up program to try to diagnose a created symptom is a bunch of baloney. It's plain and simple, just like he said. Let's if we have, there is a criminal marker, there is a certain type of behaviors that we need to examine. There's certain type of drugs that we need to create to treat certain problems in the criminality situation. We need to focus on and do research on the behavior of the so-called black man to determine his level of criminality and why he could possibly be a criminal. We don't understand it because it just seemed to be some type of thing that's happening here. This is all new. We need to look at this thing from a whole different perspective. But now, my question to you, those who are listening to this, could you please come in here and explain this to me and show me how a people can murder over 200 million people and subjugate an entire nation and wipe out whole cultures on the planet and everywhere on earth they have ever gone, they have killed somebody and don't get along with nobody on earth, all of a sudden need to be able to try to diagnose a problem that somebody else might have, totally overlooking the fact of the record of their own past. Could you help me out with that? Could you show me any indications of a justification for doing any kind of investigation on people of African descent as a result of a symptom that was created for you to diagnose? Help me understand that. Show me where I'm stupid. Now, what I'm trying to deal with here is the facts. I'm dealing with people, places, times, and events. Only all the cards on the table. For those of you who may have had your loved ones incarcerated or a loved one gunned down in the streets, here's an opportunity to let us know what you think about it. All you have to do is follow the prompts on your phone. I'll recognize you, open up the line, and you can tell us all about it right here, right now. Okay? So nobody's able to come on here and say, well, I was never given an opportunity to say anything. No, it is right now. Come on in here and tell me what you think about it. Golden opportunity. We have brothers and sisters that's being shot down in the streets all over the United States. Today, a so-called black population of people of African descent in the prisons all over the United States. And the brothers and sisters ain't killing nobody about it. It exists. The biggest prison population on the planet right here in America. But these people of African descent, there's a lot inside these prisons, they have a criminal behavior. We're going to need to check them and do some research and prescribe some medication to try to understand that type of behavior after we murdered and killed and maimed all over the planet for years and years and years. We need to come up with some type of situation to try to understand this thing. Okay, Moore, we're back. Now, I know a lot of us have the Christian faith, and we believe in Christianity and this sort of thing. Now, okay, let's take a look at your Bible right now. You believe in that. You believe in Christianity. You are following this particular religion. So let's take your Bible for a minute. And let's look at how the Africans who wrote the Bible, describe the behavior and incidents in your Bible about the Africans. There was a situation where a gentleman by the name of, I don't know how he got that English name, but his name was David. Okay, that's the title that, you know, after the falsification of the ancient African records. He was called David. And there was a giant in the land. Call him Goliath. He had defied the armies of Israel. Now, we're not talking about the stuff that we have today that they're calling the Israelis. That's a fabrication. But what was interesting is when he did, all the other brothers, they were scared. But here comes this little boy that had heard about what happened. His job was to tend the sheep. But there was something inside of him that was different from the rest of them. Yeah, he wasn't scared. Scared man will get you killed. Now, when he found out about what happened, he had one question. Who? Where this man at? Who is this man that is defying our nation? Where he at? That's all they want to know. Now, he had a king. Call him Saul. He said, anybody kill this big bad joker, we're going to get him well. He'll be able to marry my daughter, and he'll have a prominent position in the kingdom. Now, all that's good, but what this boy David want to know is where he at. Who is this man and where he at? I don't care nothing about how big he is, how bad he is, or none of that. I just want to know where he at. All right? So eventually, he found him. And when he did, this dude wanted to try to make fun of him. He said, you seen a boy after me? What kind of stuff? I consider this to be an insult. But that boy got 5 stones. Put one of them in a slingshot. And slug it. Hit him dead in the head and killed him. Took his sword and cut his head clean off. Now, my position is, after seeing that, or if I had been there to experience it, my position would have been, okay, boom, that's done. Let's go on and eat dinner. Relax, chill, man. Go on to the next thing. That's just me, you know. Y'all got to excuse me, man. I don't waste no time. Anyway, we had another incident. Well, man, a group of sons, big group of sons, 12 brothers, and a sister, beautiful young sister. She went out to gather water. And then there were some people from another tribe over there that see her. And this guy ran over there, ambushed the young lady, and raped her. But her brothers found out about it. And lo and behold, the dude that did the raping, he sent people over there to these brothers. He said, "We, you know, you want to marry your sister." They said, "Okay, that'd be fine. But it is our custom that in order for you to marry one of our daughters or sisters, you must be circumcised. Every man in your outfit got to be circumcised." So they went home, told him what he said, and he said, "Well, okay, we will abide by your custom as long as I be able to marry your sister." Okay. So all of the men become circumcised that night. It was all in pain and so and all of that. But them boys came in that town. And when they came in that town, they killed every last one of them. Okay. Let's go eat dinner, have lunch or whatever. Let's move on. Now, we have a situation here. We got Trayvon Martin, and we got another young boy sitting in the car. He, the group of boys playing music. Nobody don't have no weapon. And a Caucasian gentleman come up and told him to cut the music down. And since they didn't want to cut the music down, he pulled out a weapon and fired five times in the car and striking one of them boys twice and kill him. But now he's saying he's firing self-defense. It's almost time for us to eat lunch. Going to the next thing. Now, if anybody have any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. You can tell us what you think about it. Because the same people that were described to you in the Bible is the same people, the ancestors exist on the earth today. But what is interesting to me, with a lot of people, is people do things to people and they just let them do it. Just do it, get away with it. It happens all over the United States. And one of the most amazing things to me is I've seen a European policeman ride up on two young boys walking down the street. Neither one of these boys were armed. When the boys seen the police, they turn around and start running the other way. This cop jumps out the car, run them down, shoot him in the back, and then stand over him and shot him again. But as a result of that, the man that did the shooting was not killed. No one killed him. And I'm just asking the questions. I'm looking at the Bible, and I'm looking at what's going on in South America today. I'm looking at Geronimo. I'm looking at Sitting Bull and Custer. I'm looking at Queen Candace and the Ethiopian Nation. I'm looking at Queen Nzinga and what she's done on earth. I'm looking at David. I'm looking at, what's his name, Joshua. I'm looking at all these things. I'm trying to compare what they did then and what is this we have now? I have a college degree, and if they shot my son down, I would demand an investigation, and I would go and get a lawyer. And I was just, well, let me go over here and go tell them to see if they got a lawyer. If they didn't, exactly what it was that they did do. And let's compare it to what we're doing. What's going on? I was in jail one time, and there was a boy in that jail. And this boy, would sit up in his bed and read books. And there was another man that walked up to him and just hauled off and slapped him upside the head. And he just sit there in the bed and he just cried and cried and cried and cried. And the boy come back again and hit him again and just cried and cried and cried and cried. Most amazing thing that I've seen. I just looked at it. He said, well, he gonna let the Lord fight his battle. I said, yeah. Well, where God at right now? He slapped me upside the head right now. I see things a lot of times that I marvel at. It's very interesting to me. because how I was raised, I guess, and, how I came up, that kind of thing there, it didn't exist. You throw it and hit one up with a rock, and a whole different set of circumstances. We didn't deal with it that kind of way. We deal with it another kind of way. Now, I think it's very important that we understand survival and the protection of yourself and the defending your children and protecting your family. In my opinion, I don't think that can be done adequately without skill. Well, a lot of brothers and sisters across the United States, I hear them when the New Year's night comes, boy, they got to just blah, 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 blah. Well, my question is, how accurate are you with that weapon? How well are you shooting? We got a man here, he was a policeman. Boy, he was good. He was a brother. And these guys robbed somebody and were running. Running up a street we got here called Daly Street. And he come around the corner, and just as the brother got ready to turn the other corner, he hollered, "Halt!" And the brother didn't stop running. When he bent that corner, one of them legs was didn't make it around the corner fast enough. He fired a 45, blew his heel off. He had to come to a stop there. Now, what is interesting to me is the United States is talking about, well, we have a problem with guns and stuff like that. I don't really think we got a problem. I think when the United States military lay down all their weapons and the police departments from one end of this nation lay down all their weapons, then we'll lay down ours. And then we can have equality. But don't come to me and tell me about, we called it for all Americans to turn their guns, everybody but you. We had a thing down here in Jacksonville, Florida, where we had this brother, he come up with what's called a gun buyback program. Had brothers lined up giving them their guns. And they confiscating all the guns and turning the guns over to the sheriff's department. And the sheriff patting him on the back, said, "Man, you're doing a wonderful job. If we get on the east side, and we need to get guns out from over there." And so I asked the brother, I said, "Well, I got a chance to speak to him." I said, "Well, brother, have you given up your gun?" "Well, I don't own any guns, and I'm trying to get these guns out to brothers." I said, "Well, have you called on the sheriff's department to turn in their gun? Have you done that?" "Well, brother, I see right now, I don't even want to talk to you. This ain't about that." I said, "Well, explain to me what it's about, man. Tell me what it's about. Huh? I don't even want to talk to you." I said, "Okay. Go on, man." See, people like you, people like me, that what?
Explain to me. I still got mine. What you want to do?
Y'all excuse me, man. Anyway, if you got questions, comments, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll open up the line, and you can let them know what you think about this thing. But I'm just, you know, looking at one thing, and this thing is not making sense to me. I don't see nowhere in the Bible, for those of you who are Christians, I don't see anywhere in the Bible where David said, well, look, I'm kind of scared of this dude, man. I ain't seen none of that. When I see them, dude was too busy trying to get at it. That's what I see. I ain't smell no fear nowhere. I ain't see it nowhere. It didn't exist. You know, no kind of way. You know, so the way I see it, now you say you are a Christian and you have this document with all of these documented incidences in there. And at the same time, we got people inside the United States shooting your children down in the streets. And you going to the church looking for deliverance. Why don't you go in there and look in the Old Testament and see what they've done in there? Take a look. Don't be scared. They ain't gonna bite you. Just take a look. And then come back in there and let us know whether or not is it true or not. Okay, I think that's fair. I really do.
That is to define a social and political problem as a medical problem. And to put psychiatrists who are doctors, physicians with MDs in control of the definition of these problems, even though they are an arm of the state, as are social workers, as are psychologists, as are all of the other healthy professionals, but members of the state and arms of the state. But we are so willing to submit to their authority, such that when they define social and political behavior and behavior which has social and political causes in medical terms, even the oppressed and the victimized consent to their mistreatment. Louis Sullivan is a part of this, but in a sense we are all a part of it, because we buy the medicalization of issues. And they know, since we are willing to do anything the doctor says, tells us to do, why are you taking that poison? The doctor said, take it every 2 hours. The doctor says. So now if the doctor says that your children have a marker, a genetic marker, then let's go with it. And we don't have time this evening, one of these days we'll talk about psychiatric power and the role of psychiatrists in the system. Oh, the history of psychiatrists is horrendous. You won't believe it. You won't believe the tortures that have been created in the name of psychiatry that are even being perpetrated today. You won't believe the robbing of civil liberties, the robbing of freedom and all other kinds of things, the complete destruction and taking away of people's constitutional rights in the name of psychiatry. When you medicalize a problem and define it in medical terms, the patient loses all rights. And therefore, you can resolve a lot of issues that, if they were defined politically or socially, would then become constitutional and legal issues. But as soon as they are put under the aegis of medicine, then you reduce to a very great extent the legal and constitutional implications. So what we have going here then is an attempt to move social and political problems into the area of psychiatry so that we, even as African people, can consent to social control and the killing of our people. One quick thing, and I know we're short here. Don't get caught up in this brain and biological basis of behavior. Okay? Don't be deceived because someone can say that they have found a biological correlate with behavior. That means it is genetic in nature, or that means it's congenital, or that means that the society has no responsibility for the behavior that the person is committing. Don't buy that baloney. People run that a lot. You know, as soon as we can locate some kind of brain deficiency and correlate it, then we're ready to say, oh, society is not responsible for it. Are you kidding? Learning and experience physically transforms the brain. Traumatic experiences and even positive experiences changes the biochemical nature of the brain, as well as the neuronal functional organization of the brain, and influences the number of dendrites and synapses and other things that cells use to communicate one with the other. Now, you must understand here, then, and I could talk a great deal here about the experiments here that have shown very clearly that if you put certain animals through certain experiences, their brains actually can increase in weight. Let me give you a quick run of things that happens when some rats were placed in various environments. One group was placed in a so-called enriched environment. These rats being selected from the same genetic background, having the same genetic background and the same genetic inheritance. But they were put in under different environments. After they were put through, after they lived in these environments for a while, they were sacrificed and their brains looked at, weighed, measured, and analyzed. Now, those rats that were put in an enriched environment, let's look at some of the things that were found. They had an increased thickness of the cerebral cortex, or the gray matter. In other words, the thinking matter of their brain increased in thickness and weight. A 15% increase in the actual size of the neurons in the cortex. Increases in protein in the brain paralleling the increases in cortical weight, indicating that the growth effect was on tissue and not just on the fluid content of the brain. An increase in the amount of dendritic branching. Dendrites are the hairy branching fibers which project in large numbers from the body of each neuron and which receive input from other neurons and conduct them to the cell bodies of other neurons. There was an increase in the branching of these neurons, and a greater amount of potential information was available to each neuron. An increased number of dendritic spikes per unit length of dendrites. Increases in the number of synapses and the sizes of the contacts between the synapses. An increase in the ratio between the weight of the cortex and the weight of the rest of the brain. A 15% increase in the number of glial cells, and on and on we go. What are we saying here then? That experience changes the brain, changes the nature and the functionality of the brain. So simply because you may find a brain correlate does not take society off the hook. It means then that if society controls the experience of a people, controls their experiences, it is manipulating their brain and controlling its size. And so they want to run a game on you with this biological substrate number. A quick reference here to some tentative research that was noted in the New York Times Wednesday, September 16th. And you should read this piece, and the research is tentative, but read the scientific journals. But there's something interesting here. The headline reads, "Behavior therapy can change how the brain functions," researchers say. Like drug therapy, behavior modification therapy produces metabolic, what do we mean there? Chemical enzymatic changes in the brain and functional changes. That is, how different parts and areas of the brain relate one to the other in controlling a behavior and initiating a behavior. Know what I'm saying? Like drug therapy, behavior modification. This is a non-drug therapy, right? This is a therapy based on social relationships between the therapist and the client. Okay, and that's what we are comparing here. And what does it say here then? Both of these produces metabolic and functional changes in the brains of people with obsessive compulsive disorder. It is the first time that behavior therapy, remember we're talking about a basic social thing here, even though there's some other adjuncts to it, a method that changes the way people think, and I'm emphasizing think, about uncomfortable thoughts or feelings, the way they deal with uncomfortable thoughts and feelings, this therapy particularly relating to obsessive compulsive behavior where people are exhibiting certain attitudes toward compelling thoughts and behaviors. So this therapy, which seeks to change the way they think about these compulsive feelings and think about these thoughts and these urgings that keep telling them to do things, has been shown to physically alter brain function in a Our program for change and empowerment, for enhancing the education of our children, for maximizing our quality of life, should continue regardless of academic and social debates regarding the social or genetic bases of criminality, intelligence, and so forth. What am I saying? We must keep focused on changing the nature of power in this world. Let, regardless of the debates about what is going on. If you get caught up in the details, you're going to lose the focus. One other thing, and I'm through. We got some people out here looking for conspiracies. I want to note this because I see a lot of this going on, and there are people on the circus getting over on the conspiracy number. And there are others, you know. Let me just warn you about one thing, black people. You must think in terms of a nation. You must think of yourself as a nation. It's very important that you think of yourself as a nation. Many of the issues that you see confronting you can become very clear if you think of yourself as a nation surrounded by other nations. I tell people, I haven't written the second book on the cause of violence, the economic cause of violence, but there is an economic cause. I talk about the psychodynamics in Black on Black, but there's another part of the story, which is the economic. Quickly, it's like this, ladies and gentlemen. If you saw black people in the United States as a nation, you would recognize that to a very great extent, the social disorganization that we the breakdown of families and institutions, the criminality of our children and so forth, is the result of the fact that as a nation, black people are suffering from a negative trade imbalance, from a trade imbalance. In other words, black people have an overwhelming national debt. What do we mean by that? It means that more of your money, earnings, income are flowing out than what? Are flowing in. You jumped for equal opportunity and you educated your most talented people and you sent them away from you and sent them to work for other people, and the monies they earn, you told them to live among those other people so they contribute their brains and skills to your enemies and spend their monies among your enemies and enhance their power, and now they become neoconservatives and join the attack on the African community. You understand what I'm saying? Anytime a nation buys more than it sells, anytime that a nation ships its wealth out in great bundles, anytime the nation lets other alien groups, Arabs, Koreans, and others, and whites, come into its midst and take its money out and then let the drug dealers scrape up the rest and take that money out, their institutions are going to collapse on their heads. Your families are breaking up because they do not have the economic floor that they need to keep them there. Your children are going wild because you don't have the money to give them the appropriate education and recreation and other kind of things you need. You cannot build the institutions that you need to maintain the viability of your society because you're giving it to everyone else. And you're shipping it out. And therefore you suffer from it. Now, with this view in mind, what does this mean? You can solve this problem to a very great extent if you think of yourself as a nation, remove the aliens from your midst, and thrust out into the world and earn wealth and money and bring it back to your nation and watch its prosperity increase and watch the people become more civil with one another, build the kind of institutions to create the kind of schools you want. But until you do that, it's not going to happen. This is the program. Conspiracy, then. There are people out here looking for the mad scientist who made the AIDS gene. And now they're looking at Goodwin. Is he? Oh, he's the mad man that's getting ready to run the nuts sort of thing. And there are others who are in the government huddling around. Screw all that. Stop wasting your time hunting for the smoking gun. When you are a nation, you recognize one thing. When you discover the conspiracy, it's too late. Yeah, it's too late. When you discover it, it's too late. If you are a nation, you know what you act on as a nation? You act on capability of your enemy. They can be your friends, as a matter of fact. They can have good relationships with you. But the moment they develop the capacity to destroy you, you don't worry about whether they hate you or love you or they're conspiring against you. You recognize that they have the capacity to destroy you should they want to. You don't search for the conspirators. You search for a way to defend yourself against one should it occur. It's the fact that whites have the capacity to use AIDS that should move us to build a defense. That they have the capacity to destroy African nations that should move us to build a military. That they have the capacity to destroy our people in economic warfare. Not whether they are thinking of doing so or whether there's some person who's doing so. Screw that. Don't put the energy in building a defense and an offense on the fact that they are capable of doing so. All right? It's necessary. So, ladies and gentlemen, our eyes, we should do what? Keep the agenda on changing the power relationship, empowering ourselves so that we can defend ourselves regardless of the type of conspiracies any groups have against us. So what does it mean, ladies and gentlemen? Keeping our eyes on the prize. And that prize is power. Power to the people. Thank you very much.
Greetings. I'd like to invite you out to the Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th, 2013, located in Jacksonville, Florida. 3 days of executing and planning of executive plans for 25-year agenda, operating as an economic unit. The presenters will be Shem L. of the Tamarang 2 Project, Dr. Ali Muhammad and Minister Inki of the Black Genetic Tour, Sundiana Amma L., Professor Isef Deanham L., Tahaka Amana L., Abundance Child, Fatima, the Alchemist Shabazz, Messiah L., and more. Topics will be the execution of urban geoponics, creating independent distribution systems, creating independent economic systems, genetics, private security force, the wholesale and manufacturing of natural products, Morristown, creating one in every state, Morris Eastside Farms, putting one in every state. You do not want to miss this summit. It is very enlightening, empowering, and most of all, it's applicable. Everything that we talk about, we do. Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Log on to www.summitofthemoors.com. You can register for free. The summit is always free. You can also get your hotel room, which will be on the river at the Wyndham Hotel. That's www.summitofthemoors.com. The summits are always free. See you at the summit.
Hey, Moses, going directly into the month of July, for those of you who have problems with your mortgage, you got student loan debt, you got that child support hanging on it, we're going to cancel those contracts. And for those of you who are trying to do that, before you do anything, call me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Now, if you just want the most powerful archives in America, go right there to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. That's www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And give me a call to Haka Amana L. Bay at 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll get you some aid on that thing, okay? All right.
Keep in mind that tomorrow night is Wednesday night. We will be discussing contract law with the Moorish American government. To dial into that class, you dial the number 559-726-1200. The access code is 107985#. Press the pound key. That's 559-726-1200. Access code 107985#. And that's every Wednesday night with the Moorish American government. We're discussing contract law and dealing with the system that we have here going on inside the United States. But now, back to what we're discussing about the survival of our children. And one of the questions is, what type of weapons should we have for our survival? And we always discuss that in the context of urban survival, hunting, fishing, and trapping, being able to provide food for your family, and how to hunt animals, how to fire these things, and become a seasoned hunter. If you're hunting deer, you want to use certain type of rifle. My favorite is the 30-06 high-powered rifle with daytime scopes as well as nighttime scopes. In the event that I'm hunting at night or what have you, I'm able to use these devices in order to bring down whatever it is that I'm shooting at. But the most important thing is to be skilled so that you do not ever miss the target. Now, when it comes to fishing, you want to be able to extract the fish from the ocean and scale the fish, gut the fish, and make him preferable in preparing so that you can cook him and feed your family. Growing your own food. Now, we have East Side Farms here, and we're going to present you with an opportunity to see that right here in Jacksonville, Florida, when you come here, August the 16th through the 18th at the Moorish Summit. We'll give you take a look at that. Now, it is very important for us to understand at this point that we need to be concentrating on self-survival. For those of you who need to know more about the Moorish American government, you go to www.moorishamericangov.org. That's www.moorishamericangov.org. And you can register right there.
put your name on the census, gather all your family members, and put their names there. And that's all you have to do. Go ahead, click send, and you're registered with your government. The National Conference Call number is there, right there to the site, where you can dial into the National Conference Calls that are held 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on the East Coast. that's 7 days a week and twice on Sunday. However, on Wednesday night, that is when we discuss contract law inside the context of the United States of America and what's going on, and so that you can understand that. Don't forget, the free article that I offer is very, very informative. That gives you the breakdown on what's going on inside the United States, so you will know exactly what you need to be attempting to do, what you need to be concentrating on getting done. We have the archives, the most comprehensive and powerful library inside the United States. It's got your video in there. It's got your audio. It's got your PDF files. It's got your documents there. And then you have guidance with us to help you with these things. You're getting rid of your mortgage, getting rid of your child support, getting rid of all the tentacles of this society that enslaves you. The solutions and stuff are there. And we're here to support you. As a minister of education for the Moorish American government over the entire state of Florida, with over 200,000 souls, we're prepared to aid our people and to do whatever we have to do. We're not overlooking the brothers with the Black Panther Party. We have been checking them out. We have many brothers, a good friend of mine from the Nation of Islam as well. And so, therefore, we are doing something inside the United States, but these broadcasts are designed to help my people, and that is what I'm doing. It doesn't have anything to do with me being racist against anybody, because to me, that's an insult. I mean, how could I be a racist for embracing and loving my own people, just like everybody else on earth is doing? I see the Chinese people are loving Chinese people. I see the Mexicans are loving Mexican people. I see the Puerto Rican people loving the Puerto Rican people. When it comes to us, the people of African descent, we have this thing in our brain that, well, we need to, you know, God say we need to love everybody. I go, okay, well, that's fine. But before you start doing that, tell me everything that you have done to love yourself and your own people first. Because to me, my people come first, and everybody else comes second. I know you heard me say that 1,000 times, but that's just the way I say it. I'm not trying to get out and promote any type of multiculturalism. I'm a man of African descent, and therefore it's natural for me to love and embrace people of African descent. That's the way I see it. Now, if I'm wrong for doing that in the face of the fact that every nation on the face of the earth is doing exactly that, please raise your hand. If you got education in some kind of way in your brain, they have led you to believe that you're supposed to leave your nation in shambles and go out and embrace everybody else, please raise your hand and explain that to me. Help me out, because I certainly want to hear what you got to say with your smart self. Come on in here and tell me about it. Somebody gave you a college degree, and you have a whole different way of thinking, and your way is the right way in the face of the fact that your nation is in shambles? Help me out. Explain it to me. I'm listening to you. I listen to everything you got to say. All you got to do is raise your hand and follow the prophet on the phone. I open up the line, and you can tell us all about it right here tonight. Explain to me, how is it normal and right for people of African descent to be gunned down in the streets from the east to the west, from the north to the south, and it's all right, and you're supposed to be multicultural? Amazing. I mean, and don't get me wrong. Now, we got one that's going to come in here and screen us out. Erico 404, tell us what it is. Explain it to me. Help me out.
Yeah, this Y2L. You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear. Come on.
Okay. I mean,
you got a lot of people dying in the streets. I don't know that dude, and I don't know what he did to deserve that. And I don't even know the other dude. They both look harmless to me. You know what I'm saying? But I heard they said the police told the dude not to follow, and he followed him anyway. You know what I'm saying? And then the dude ended up getting, you know what I'm saying, went to the astral plane after that. But that's what I heard. But I know. Like, I want to talk about karma and dharma. You see what I'm saying? Like, there's a person who really loves this planet like the way I do, and the birds and the bees like I do, and the fruit and the science and all that, and the gold and the silver, right? And culturism. I mean, they know about karma and dharma, cause and effect, you know what I'm saying? And I think that people don't get killed for nothing, you know what I'm saying? It's like for a purpose. Or they had to do something. If I was God and I was the master of the universe, and I see, and I'm with my super wife up there, and we looking down and seeing all this drama down here, and I said in my book that I'm protect the ones who keep it real with they self like that, right? That's what I'm gonna do. You see what I'm saying? But I know they got a karma and dharma, cause and effect. I don't know why he died, you know what I'm saying? But I know if I'm God, I ain't finna let none of my people die out there. You know what I'm saying? In them streets. Mm-hmm. Now, I see a lot of black people like my own kind. They giving me hell out there. Just for me, minding my business. It's against the law in the hood nowadays to mind your business. That's basically what they're telling me. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? They look good on the outside. They look, and it's like that movie Harry Potter. It's just like Harry Potter. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. I mean, Harry Potter, he's trying to get to the destination. He on his quest. You know what I'm saying? He from a tribe called Quest, and he on his quest. You see,
mm-hmm.
Then you got that troll beside him. He looking all innocent, but the only thing he could think about is to take that man's jewels. That's the only thing he could think about. So I got people that look just like that in the eyes, that troll that be with Harry Potter. They look innocent all day long, but then you turn around and they stab you in your back like, man, you can't trust nobody. You see what I'm saying? So I don't know what's going on out there, but I know if there was a God with some common sense out there, and if I were God, I know I ain't going to let not one of my people die or get gunned down. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. All
right.
If, yeah. All
right.
So
well,
I don't know why he died.
And bringing that very excellent description in here for us, I'm going on to the next caller. We got another one with the hand raised, okay?
Okay.
Area code 239. 239. Okay. All right. We got another caller. Go ahead and raise your hand. We open up the line so you can let us know what you think about it. So this is very, very interesting. Brother said, if he was God and he had his super wife with him, he'll say, no, that's him, that's not right. But we do have people. Hold on a minute here. Erico 501.
Peace, brother. This is Brother OB, man, calling out of Arkansas.
Hey, man. Okay, man.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in a little small town, about 50,000, man. You know, it's a 75% majority of our people here.
Okay.
And you know, a lot of you got a lot of, you know, religion has a real stronghold in this area. So, you know, that pacifier is out right now. You know, let's, you know, you can do let's do a rally, let's shake some signs, let's pump our fists in the air and say we mad, and then go on back home and go spend your money with the white folk and, you know, hold hands with them and, you know, all of that. And we think it's just going to go away, you know. And I'm telling people, I'm like, what is it going to take? Did they got to start cutting the genitals off again? They got to start hanging loose from trees at the courthouse. You know, what is it going to take for our people to realize that, you know, we got an open enemy. You know, we got an enemy within, and we got an enemy on the outside too. So, you know, a lot of folks are like, what can we do to keep our people safe? And I said, well, I don't see how shaking the sign and standing out in the open, making yourself a target, is going to stop them from shooting you. Now, let's say these people just had like a little relapse and they thought they was back in the 60s, early 60s, when they were just sniping us and knocking us off, you know, with no remorse. Same thing they're doing now, but it was more prevalent doing then. Now, let's say we do one of these little rallies out here and somebody, baby, gets sniped while we out here holding one of these signs. And I said, what's the reality of our situation going to be then? When we out here trying to meet, because we mad, we emotional, you know, they want me, they brothers call me, say, hey, I didn't set up this rally. I didn't call the local news station to come down. I said, brother, what's the agenda? Well, I don't know. I'm what you think it should be? I said, brother, if you ain't got no plan, why do we need? What's the rally for? You know, what's the process behind it? To show white folks that we still unorganized? We ain't got no plan of action? We reactionary? I said, that to me is a waste of time. We're at a different level of planning right now. Because, see, I ain't got no question about who and what's going on. I ain't confused on what's going on. And some brothers and sisters still think, what a friend we have in these people. Like that old gospel song, what a friend we have in Jesus. What a friend we still got in these people. You know, okay. I said, you know, I just can't go along with that. So, like I said, I'm in a different level of planning, preparing myself. And, you know, some of the things that you talked about tonight as far as training. Because these folks are out there training. They've been training. They've been practicing. They've been teaching their children how to shoot, hand-to-hand combat, survival gear. They've been doing this stuff. We just waking up to it. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that's my take on the situation.
All right, brother, I certainly appreciate you calling in, and I'm going to go to the next caller. Ladies and gentlemen, if you got a question or comment, now's the time to raise your hand. Area code 239.
Hello.
Hey, man.
Hello. All right. How y'all doing?
Doing just fine.
Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Okay. Well, first of all, I just wanted to, my name is Lion. That was what I go by, Lion Roy. I currently reside in Houston, Texas. I've been coming in and out of your show, but I've been on the last enough to hear. I just first want to comment to the brother that was saying, he was mentioning about, like, if he was God this or if he was God that, and there's no innocent, and why I wouldn't allow my people to die. See, that's the first, in my opinion, that's the first mistake us as a people do, is that we always trying to speak and think for a God instead of being silent and letting the God speak for themselves. You know what I'm saying? Everybody always is trying to justify or trying to take everything to that for our unity. The world, us as a people, will never ever unify through no religion or no spirituality. Everybody thinks it's going to happen, but it won't, because you're going to have to force people in order to believe that. You know, those out there, nobody can prove, I'm not saying that there is not one, but I'm saying nobody can prove that any belief or religion, whatever is the belief, is the truth. And like the brother that was just speaking said, we always want to go to religion and standing out to a picket sign. And what he said is very, very true. We do need to train, but it's going to be very, very hard to get our people to come together if we don't stop trying to speak for gods of the earth. And if there is one that shall be, let them speak for themselves, because the gods and the devils is right here on earth. We're seeing it. If you do a godly act, you God in you. You do devilish acts, and people don't want to say the white man is the devil, but look at all the devilish acts they've done, where everybody on the earth, they have, every nation or race of people on the earth has never, ever, ever been able to get along with them. They've taken from everybody, and they're going to keep doing it. You understand? And like, our people do need to train in the United, but it's going to be hard to ever try to unite people on any type of God. Our people are going to die waiting on a savior when we don't realize that we are the messiahs ourselves within, and we have to save ourselves and protect ourselves. The men and the women are bickering and fighting over the black men ain't this, the sisters ain't that, and that just gonna, look, all alone they are steady captivating the minds of our youth, incarcerating them, killing them, locking them up in jail so their minds can get messed up so they can get raped, probably by some Nazi. They'll take a skinny brother that then got locked up and lock him up with a tank of Nazis and let him so he can get raped, his head's messed up. Those brothers, a lot of them are no more good to us when they come out because they've had that done to them. And a lot of times when we laugh and joke, oh, you're going to go to jail and get raped, but it's not funny because they're doing this on purpose because they intentionally infeminizing our people. Now, I heard you earlier mentioning the Bible and mentioning, I mean, like, I actually used to be in the Hebrew Israelite faith, no longer, but I know it to the T. But the thing about it is that we say this and that person wrote these books, but we can only date those books back so far. You understand? Every one of those books got about 55 publishing dates on them. Every time that man has put his hands on them, and every time man touched something, they corrupted. I'm not saying that people can't have their own beliefs or spiritualities or religions or whatever, but if we're going to unify as a people, we got to learn to do one thing, the realest thing that Malcolm X said. He says, I'm not speaking to you as a black Muslim. I'm speaking to you as a black nationalist. I'm leaving my religion at home. You know, but I'm coming to you here for my people. We're always trying to bring this into it, and we see what's going on now. And a lot of people that are mad, that weren't mad before, you know. But this same type of thing has been going on, and it's been going on. This one just got publicized, and I'm just as mad about anybody. You see, they got Trayvon, they got his pictures of his death all on the internet, but yet they protect the identity of this white woman that they claim that Kobe raped, you know. Whatever, I don't know if he did or he not, but would they protect her identity? You barely can find a photo of her. Do you know what she looked like? Do any of y'all know what she looked like? My point is that I mean, when it comes to a God's concept, we need to kill that trying to talk or think or speak for a God that we have never met or don't know. I mean, we think we have our dreams, we have our own spiritual intuitions. But I don't feel like any Heavenly Father or God or whatever we want to label as would leave us in the confusion. Would you leave your children in the confusion with just a few notes without coming before them to reveal yourself? So I'm not saying that there is no creator. I would never say that. But what I'm saying is that we're always trying to come up with a concept, whether it's from Islam, whether it's Christianity, whether it's from Hebrew Israelite, with all these things. Really, we can say our people put our hands on it, but really, those were concepts that were taken from us, from other things that were just ways of life and put into these books. And if we're going to ever come together and get our minds right and unify as a people, we're going to have to learn to either accept or respect other people's beliefs, but they leave it to the house, or just totally cast it out, because nobody can prove any of that. You know, we got to start doing what we know is existing and what we know is the proof and what we know is the facts of what is being done to our people. And I don't know. That's just the way I'm just going to, I mean, I didn't mean to get to going on so long, but that's just kind of how, I just caught up on a few things y'all were saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know.
Well, I certainly appreciate you coming in here and telling it to us, and we thank you for that information, brother.
I mean, you know, I came up in the, you know, church just like that. I didn't study, you know, many pastors and studied them, but I noticed that every war in the world has been behind some religion. You know, these people have been fighting over here in the Middle East for years for land. That land don't belong to the Arabs nor the Jews or the Khazars. That, you know, they don't belong to none of them. That's our land. There's no Middle East. There's no continent Middle East. That's Northeast Africa. In ancient times, they made that canal and dug it in bigger and made that man and drew up those maps. You know, the first one to ever explore Africa was a white Italian explorer born from Grenada named Leo Africanus. Google him up. He's truly who gave the name to Africa, meaning horrifying and without cold. So we're horrifying. Of course, the land is without cold, but, you know, that's how they describe Africa. You know, the whole two upper regions of Africa was known as Upper and Lower Ethiopia, which we translate into Ethiopia today. So, I mean, it's been taking us from a long time, but our people don't realize the same ones they taught you these books and these Bibles are the same ones beating and raping your beef, but they told you don't praise no more African gods or spiritualities. Jesus, they beat this into us, you know, but yet they good and they righteous, you know. So we have to take a look at that. Where did we get these things from? You know, who put these things up on us? Who taught us all these things?
Well,
I'm sorry, somebody
agree,
was speaking. I'm sorry. You know,
brother,
and I'm not. Thank you.
I'm going to bring this out. I'm going to open up the lines and see if we got any more coming. All right. Thanks, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The lines are open. Go ahead and raise your hand right now, and you can tell us what you think about this situation. Brother Boston, very, very important things to the table. Me personally, when it comes to God, stuff, you know, I think that's wonderful. Ain't no doubt in my mind about that. But when it comes to my people, my family, and my children, I want to know who done it and where you at. Now, then God. Now we have 48 minutes, and so if you have a question or comment, now is the time to raise your hand, and we will open up the line so you can tell us what you think about this thing, because we have to get to the solution. Now the first plug that we played, the brother came on, and he said, "Hey man." These Europeans are trying to kill you. They want to kill you, all of you. So we have to come up with a solution to this problem. There are a lot of us who don't believe that. Some of us have some good Caucasian friends living next door in a gated community. Some of us just got our master's degree, and we have arrived. But we are failing to look at ourselves as a nation of people and monitoring what's going on with the nation. And look at that in the context of what Sitting Bull did with customs. Sitting Bull arranged it where the entire nation of his people can come to the party when the war started. And as a result of that, the enemies were wiped out. Period. So we got brothers, sisters, y'all, Chicago, California, Texas, Kansas City, Miami, Jacksonville, North Carolina, South Carolina, Atlanta, Mississippi, Alabama, all over South Dakota, North Dakota, Missouri, all 50 states where certain things are going on. But what about the convergence of the nation when there's a problem in one of these areas? If there was a shooting of Trayvon Martin in Jacksonville, Florida, where were 100 men from New York City? Where were the 100 men from Los Angeles? Where were the 100 men from Miami? Where were the 100 men
from Detroit? Where were the 100 men from Texas? Where were the 100 men? So we come down and see what you can explain to us what happened. I mean, that's what Sitting Bull did. I'm just throwing that out there. But now, if we have a situation where we are under national attack, I think that we need to look at this thing nationally. We need to take a look at it. And if you are looking at it and you are seeing this thing happen, and it's you see what's going on in all these 50 states. And see, I don't think that we can continue to count on the media to alert us to what's going on in individual states. For instance, if there's a brother or sister gunned down in Little Rock, Arkansas, we need the media to get on and hold a national interrupted broadcast. We interrupt this programming in all 50 states to let you know that this brother has been gunned down in Little Rock, Arkansas, so that we can get at least 75,000 men on the ground in Little Rock, Arkansas. You know, I'm just saying, just a little, you know, there's a little information out there. Don't pay me no attention. I'm just a radio show host. I just studied this stuff for over 35 years. And I studied my history and my culture for that length of time. And I have been observant of some things that have taken place on this earth and remedies for situations and what was done. And how it was done, who done it, and the national aspects of the situation. Now, back to hunting, fishing, and trapping. When you learn how to fish, you're confident in fishing. When you learn how to trap your prey, you're confident in trapping. When you learn how to hunt successfully, you are confident in that. When you learn how to become a marksman with your weapon when you're hunting out in the woods to survive, to provide food for your family, you become confident in that. So, if you have these skills and you are confident, you know, me personally, I go anywhere I want to go. I don't, you know, I'm polite. I'm courteous. I'm thankful. I'm delightful. When I see people, I speak to them. They speak to me. We hold conversations about different stuff. And I don't see anything missing. See anything evil or wicked about what I do. I go out in the woods and practice every year. I put on my camouflage fatigues, my jungle boots, my green beret hat, my munitions vest, and I get up out there and I go through the jungle. I smell the bushes and I love the woods. I smell I don't kill nothing, I ain't gonna eat. I practice, and when I come out, my skills are increased and I go back to normal. I go to the barbershop just like you, get my hair cut. It doesn't make me a wicked person. I don't need to call on God about nothing except to thank him for the life that he's given me and the things that I have and I've earned. But as far as being fearful, I don't know what that is. I ain't never did. I don't know nothing about that kind of stuff. Anyway, you will call yourself a man and a woman. What have you done for yourself? What type of training and skills have you provided for yourself?
I mean, you know, let's take a look. I mean, let's be realistic. You see all these things going on around you. I mean, we put these shows on and broadcasting these men and telling you over and over and over what's going on in America. How the people see you. You're looking at the economic indicators. You're looking at everything from every conceivable angle. But my question to you is, what are you doing about it? What are you preparing? You got a wife. You got a child. Can your wife look at you and say, I can depend on him to protect me? If something goes wrong, my husband can protect me. Now, you can ask my mate. You can ask her. Do you think that if something went wrong, Tahaga would take you? The first thing that come out of my mouth, oh, my God. You don't want to mess with that. Because she's confident in what she knows for a fact. So my question to you is, we as the people of African descent in South America is under a national attack. So what are you doing to prepare yourself to defend your family, which means that self-preservation is the first law of nation. Family preservation, all these things come first. That doesn't mean that you got to go out and murder nobody. That doesn't mean that you're evil. That doesn't mean you're wicked. That doesn't mean that you're godless, because you learn how to shoot. You learn what weapon to possess. You learn how to make your own ammunition. You learn how to hunt, how to fish, how to trap. A man go in the woods, an animal is in the woods, you're able to track that animal from one end of this nation to the other and successfully find it. Does that make you wicked? No. Does that make you evil? No. Is that against God? No, it doesn't. The woods are full of food. If we have the dollar collapse today, can you provide food for your family? Can you go in the woods and do what you have to do to bring food out to feed your family? That's a fair question. And there's nothing evil or wicked about it. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with Jesus Christ or Christianity or religion. He's just a man. Taking responsibility for your own survival. Can you protect yourself? Can you defend yourself if attacked by an animal? Do you have these skills? Do you have this training? So, in my opinion, I think a man should set aside a little time for that. Cut the football game off. When the playoffs is NBA, come on, cut it off. Get out of there, man. Go down and prepare yourself. Learn something, man. Do something for yourself. Don't be sitting back. I don't know nothing. I ain't done nothing. And I'm everybody around me, you know, I'm just vulnerable. I'm just him. I'm waiting on something to happen by some hook or crook. Come on, man. That ain't getting it. That's simply not cutting it right there. Take it from me, I know.
Third, they define the differences as the causes of the social problem. In other words, we create the problem. Then we go in and look at the people who have the problem and see how they're different from those who don't. And then we say, oh, their differences is the reason why they have the problem. You see, so they're going to create these brain dysfunctions, then go in and find the brain dysfunction, and then say the brain dysfunction is the cause of the problem. Now let's medicate.
Now that's amazing. but that is exactly what is going on inside the United States. Exactly. Okay?
That is to define a social and political problem as a medical problem. And to put psychiatrists, who are doctors, physicians with MDs, in control of the definition of these problems, even though they are an arm of the state, as are social workers, as are psychologists, as are all of the other healthy professionals, but members of the state and arms of the state. But we are so willing to submit to their authority, such that when they define social and political behavior and behavior which has social and political causes in medical terms, even the oppressed and the victimized consent to their mistreatment. Louis Sullivan is a part of this, but in a sense, we are all a part of it because we buy the medicalization of issues. And they know, since we are willing to do anything the doctor says, tells us to do, why are you taking that poison? The doctor said, take it every 2 hours. The doctor says. So now if the doctor says that your children have a marker, a genetic marker, then let's go with it. And we don't have time in the evening, one of these days we'll talk about psychiatric power.
Okay. Now, I just wanted to re-rehearse that for a minute so you can get that down in your mind, clear and concise, because that's exactly what's going on inside the United States. When we get an ailment, well, you know, I need to go to the doctor. Okay. Well, before you go to the doctor, can you tell me what you have done to cure yourself? What you have taken the time to study about you that you can provide some type of help and aid for yourself? What have you done? Have you put any preventative measures in place for yourself? Have you done any studying for yourself? Why you go to another man to do something and you haven't done anything for yourself? You see, that's what I'm saying. You know, I've been wrestling with a whole lot of stuff. You know, ever since I was a child coming up. You know, I used to have to battle against my own family. You know, when we were growing up, I had brothers. And my philosophy was very, very simple. But then I discovered later, and I didn't find out later, that they was holding information from me. You know, somebody did something to my sister one time, and my brother, they run over to the house, and the first thing out of my mama's mouth, whatever you do, don't tell him. Whatever you do, don't you tell your brother, because he ain't like y'all. Y'all sit around and do the right thing, but he'll be straight out of the door and go against the entire community in upheaval. But you're telling me. So my question to you is, what do you do? What do you study? What have you learned? Have you taken responsibility for yourself as a man? Have you provided protection for yourself? Can you defend yourself based on the skills and training that you have for you? I mean, I personally feel like that's a fair question, especially in the face of the fact that they are gunning young males down in the streets of African descent, you know. To me, it just seems fair. I guess I'm just an oddball. But, you know, I have questions. You know, and I don't look at TV, but I be hearing things. Hey, man, they killed so-and-so over here. And they killed
So it's a little, well, like, okay. But my question is, what did anybody do? Street. That's fine. I went to the whole community.
for a week. Try to find out. Keep that car. I could never get to the bottom of it. Keep that car. I'm okay. I was upset. I still am. But I'm still trying to find out. 12 years later. One man put his foot on that car. Now, I'm not a mean person. I'm a man, but I think that was unfair. But I think it's even more unfair for my family to withhold that kind of information. Suppose one of them had shot in the car or something like that. That's not good. Be honest with you, I don't like it. I already know saying I love peace. I really do. But right is right and wrong is wrong. As my brother, sister, first thing out of their mouth, I don't know nothing about it. On the left. I don't know. That's how they make me sick. You know, when I ask questions, they don't give me no answer. I want an answer. I want to know what happened. Anyway, each of us have circumstances and stuff that goes on in our life, and it behooves us to pay attention to what's going on. Try to get the facts on situations. But the thing is, which is much more important to me, and this is just the way I see it, I think that every one of us should be skilled and have some specialized training. You should be able to know how to survive, because survival is important in this day and age. And we got a United States of America operating under as a corporation, they're printing money out of thin air that doesn't have any valuable value to it. And if it collapses, what are you going to do? What, man? I mean, if you don't have any skills, and you don't have any training, and you say you got a wife and family, and you've agreed to help do your part and protect and defend your family and provide for them, but you have no skills and you have no training and you have done nothing to get any of this, what are you going to do? I mean, I'm interested in knowing what you're going to do to survive. How? What? With what? Do you have any skills and training? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, year after year after year after year, brothers and sisters are being either shot down in the streets or incarcerated and called criminals. Racism, all kind of stuff going on in all 50 states. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that, hey, man, I need to do something for myself. I need to protect myself or get in a position to be able to do something. I need to learn how to grow my own food. I need to learn how to go out and catch fish. And I'm quite proud of the brothers and sisters. When I come across the bridge, I see them on the side of the bridge. They had their little fishing poles and stuff, and they'd be sitting there fishing off the bridge and stuff. I said, okay. I said, y'all catching your own fish. Even though they after they catch their fish, they had to walk past the fish market. They caught their own fish because they learned how to catch their own fish. And so they could catch the fish and take it home and skin it and cook it and provide some food for yourself. You know? That makes sense to me. I learned how to do that. I go out in the woods and catch him a deer and shoot him and skin him and stack up a little meat if that's what you eat. Grow you some vegetables and If you got some chronic illness and stuff, grow you some herbs so you can actually cure yourself instead of running out of the hospital to my going to a doctor by some. No, the herbs are on the planet for the healing of the nation. That's what heals you. The herbs are here for your healing. You take these herbs, if you go, and for those of you who have my archives, you get in there, we have a section on Morris Health. And all the pros are there. I tell you exactly how to cure yourself of your illnesses. For his survival, we have two whole links with tons of information on there for survival. Right there at HogArchives.org. You can get in there and stay in there a week. And there's everything you need to know about what you need to do to be able to hunt and survive. You can. I did something that's funny that happened near Jacksonville. It was this lady. She's kind of big sister, and she went up to we have a store here called Kmart, and these guys was heroin addicts. They're gonna shoot dope and have no money. So what they're gonna do is they're gonna go out at night and start snatching pocketbooks. But this particular night, this was got out of the car and walking up to the store. One of them come between the cars and grabbed her pocketbook, but she had the pocketbook wrapped across her wrist, wrapped across her forearm going to the store. And when he grabbed the pocketbook, she's big sister, strong. His little tail tried to get the pocketbook, but when he snatched it, his little feet went up in the air, she snatched it back and hit the ground. Boy, she got on top of him, and she went to work. And it just so happened that the state trooper was in the store. And somebody ran in the store and said, this lady out here sitting on top of this man, if you don't get him out here, she gonna get out here, she gonna kill him. And the state trooper ran out there and said, ma'am, please get off him. Please get off of me, ma'am. She said, he tried to snatch my pocketbook. He said, I know, but I'll take over now. She said, no, I appreciate you being out here, but I don't need your help. Pow! She beat him so bad. When they had him, the state trooper and the store manager and some employees had to pull off off of that boy. And when she got off of him, he just laid there. And said, is he dead? Oh, man. But that was a very interesting episode. And he had a buddy with him. His buddy ran and left him. As he seen that woman whooping on his partner, he ran off his left. He run off the level. But they pulled that woman off of him, and they didn't arrest him. After she told him what happened, he said, well, ma'am, you free to go. We're going to call the ambulance. And they brought the rescue unit out there, picked that boy up, and put him in the rescue unit to the hospital. They were checking his vital signs and said, well, we hope he make it. They ain't looking mighty grim, because she done beat the tar out of him trying to snatch her party. And I think that was the end of his pocketbook snatching career after that. Anyway, back to addressing the situation that we have inside the United States. I think that we all should pay attention. And brothers, cut the football game off. Cut the basketball game off, man. Because is it time out for that now? Man, this thing is serious, and these people ain't playing. They're actually killing your brothers in prison, man. And God knows what's going on inside the prison. See, your loved one, you have to contact them and find out what's going on. You know, let them know what's going on. We're outside on the streets and stuff, and so that we can know what's going on, and we'll know what to do out here. And so I just want to get down for us to understand the importance of what I'm trying to tell you. We need to pay attention. You know, when there's a shooting, we need to just take a look at it. Because all you got to do is take a look at it, especially when it involves a situation like we have down here with the Trayvon Martin situation, and we had the other guy. I mean, it's just obvious to you. It should be obvious to you by now. We had what was the young man's name that they killed and just throwed out in the water? I can't think of his name. Man. Then we have George Stinney, and then we got the electric chair. It's as if what's going on in the United States is normal. But I'm here to tell you that it's not normal. And where you will wake up to the fact it's not normal, if you begin to do your research and begin to study your ancient culture and your ancient story and look at what's going on inside the United States, that will tell you, be an indication to you, that what you need to do, what skills you need to possess. Me personally, I don't care what nobody says about my skills and training. I don't care what you say about that. You say anything you want to say. Because I know the first law of nature is a survival. You know that that's the bottom line. That's what anybody. That's what you're supposed to learn. You're supposed to be able to survive. I've been surviving a long time. How to cook my own food. How to grow my own food. All that stuff, hunt, fish, trap, shoot, all that. Ain't nothing wrong with that. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what my my father did. That's what my grandfather did. That's what my great-great-grandfather did. And we follow the same pattern. But when you start getting in your mind that an enemy of your people has devised something to benefit you that's different from your survival skills, now you got a problem. Alright, that's it. I don't know what that was about. Anyway, back to the survival thing, because this is so important, because what I'm looking for, what I would love to see, and what I would love to get reports on, is every man in the United States of African descent, regardless of what your belief is, regardless of what church you go to, regardless of what faith you belong to, if you would learn how to get some skills and to look at yourselves collectively as a nation of people, inside the confines of the United States of America. It is important for us to learn how to do this stuff today. We need to get cracking on this. Okay? We need to do that. It's very, very important. Because the way I look at it, you know, with what's going on inside the United States today, if I was a sister and a brother trying to holler at me, one of the first questions I ask, well, how much skill do you have? Do you know how to shoot? If you have to know the hell one of the questions, I say, I'll see you later. I ain't interested. y'all got to forgive me. I don't know about being a woman. I don't know nothing about it. Oh, man. But I tell you what. It is, it behooves us to try to get some training on some things now, okay? And the time is up for us to just keep passing over what's going on and to continue to look at this thing as a scattered people. We've got to start looking at it as a collective. We've got to realize if they're shooting the brothers down in Chicago, what's to stop them from from shooting the ones out of Florida, as you can see. I wasn't stopping them from shooting the ones out of Houston. I wasn't stopping them from doing it in New York City, or North Carolina, South Carolina, Arkansas, Kansas City, Missouri. Brothers, sisters, you got to wake up. This stuff, you got to start looking at it collectively. And you got to start maneuvering in a position to get some individual skills and training for yourself so that if there is a problem, when it comes to you, things are a little bit different. You see, we can't just run over him and just do this here to these people here, because these people here are a little bit different. That's all I'm saying. I'm gonna hold on, hold on, hold on.
They learn, as I've learned, that being loved is more important than painting the town morning, noon, and night. Cause night life may have bright lights, but I've learned in time they go in. But your love and tender arms, I can always come home to them. And I'm gonna hold on, hold on. I lost every bit of my bank account. I'm tired of running around. So in your arms I'm gonna settle down. If I don't have a dime, I know your love is mine. And I'm gonna hold on, hold on, hold on to your unchanged. Everybody needs somebody. Ooh, I need you. I know now nobody really loves me. Honey, 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 the way you do. One more thing. I changed, girl, my life as often as I've changed my scene. Only to learn the only true happiness is being, honey, being loved by you. That's why I'm gonna hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on to your unchanging love. I'm gonna hold on, hold on, baby, to your unchanging love. I need you, baby, got to keep on holding on. I'm gonna hold on, hold on, baby.
Okay, Moores, we only have 6 minutes left. And we're coming down to the end of the broadcast. We'll be coming back later on in the week to discuss this situation involving debt collectors and the tactics and stuff that they're using and how we should go about dealing with them. Today is Tuesday. Hopefully I'll try to get that in for you by Thursday. We'll bring that out as how to deal with your debt collectors. We're going to put that information out there for you so you can know how to handle them, because a lot of these people are calling people on the telephone, and they got all kind of tactics that they use. And so we want to bring this type of stuff to a halt among the people. people, and so that they can learn how and what to do when you are contacted by these people, and how to handle it. Now, don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, on August the 16th through the 18th, right here in Jacksonville, Florida, we're going to host the Moorish Summit. So make sure that you all are here, and don't miss this. This is going to be a blast. We got brothers and sisters coming here from all over the United States, and we'll be right here in Jacksonville, Florida. So make sure that you've booked your reservations, and go over to www.summitofthemoors.com website and register. Get your information in there. The number to call is there. And talk to Brother Diallo, and he can give you any other breakdown or any other information that you may need, that you may have there. And as far as your free autos are concerned that we mentioned on the broadcast, just send me an email or say, talk, send me those free articles you mentioned, and send that to tarhaka53@hotmail.com. That's tarhaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush those articles to you straight through the email, okay? In fact, we just sent some out this evening. We had a brother sent an email right through the broadcast, but we was able to get it sent over there to him. So stay tuned Thursday night for how to deal with your debt collectors. And, of course, we're going to come back and start dealing with the student loan thing from a different area, child support and all this stuff and your mortgage and stuff. So stay tuned for that. Tomorrow night, we're teaching contract law right there on the Moorish American Government, so don't miss that. Make sure you're there Wednesday night. So if you got questions or comments involving that, we're able to assist you. Well, we're coming to the end of the broadcast, and I've been your host, Hopper Amana L. Bay. So you all have a good evening.
Clap your hands, everybody, if you've got what it takes. Because I'm Curtis Blow, and I want you to know that these are the boys. Breaks in a bus, breaks on the car. Breaks to make you a superstar. Breaks to win and breaks to lose. Around.
Break it up, break it up.
the guy in blue. What you gonna do?
Break it up, break it up.
And to the girl in green, don't be so mean.
Break it up, break it up.
And the guy in red, say what I said.
Break it up, break it up, break it up, break down!